If you can't get enough of the Mixing Music Podcast and want three times the amount of episodes every week, subscribe to our exclusive content for only $4 a month or $40 a year at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
One, two, three.
Hello, welcome to Mixing Music with me, DK. Today we're going to talk a little bit about EQ and compression. We're going to talk about just the basics. We're not going to get super into detail. That's just not me. I'm not super duper technical. That doesn't mean I don't do my research. It just means that I don't believe that the energy that you put into learning about the technical will bring as much returns as if you just put your energy into figuring out what sounds good. Different compressors sound different. Different EQs sound different. Some people on YouTube say, this sounds better for this. This sounds better for this. They found out through their own experimentation. You need to find out what sounds good through your experimentation. This is huge. And if you decide to try a compressor, you need to figure out if you can even hear it. And if it sounds good, and if you can't hear it, or you can't tell that it doesn't sound, or it doesn't sound slightly better, slightly more controlled in the sense of compression, then you don't need to put it on. I typically work in hip hop, as I said before, and a lot of the drums are sampled, a lot of the instruments are sampled, samples are triggered or something like that, and it's interesting, with that stuff, there's almost never a reason to compress, like a kick or snare. Unlike rock, when you're recording an actual acoustic drum set, like each snare hit is a totally different volume, so you need a little bit of compression, theoretically speaking. But with hip-hop, and with like 808s, you typically don't need to compress anything as far as the drums. Unless you're going for a specific type of vibe. Like, there's a compressor called the Wolf compressor. I think it adds a vibe more than anything else, and it's kind of fun to use. But typically, like, that's not something that I do personally. That being said, I do mix a lot of acoustic drum kits. And I do use compression on that. But I don't really do it for, like, 808s and, like, a lot of, the sample drums. I do want to say that if you do try compression EQ, again, like, I really can't emphasize this enough, you really need to make your decisions and choose the tools that you will use consciously. You don't want to just put on a compressor or an EQ. And I mean, obviously there's room for experimentation, like, but in the end, you should be able to bypass all the plugins and then turn them back on and hear a different, and you should be able to feel better about the sound that's coming out. If it's different, I don't know. Personally, I think that, like, I don't want sounds that I mix to sound too different because the artist intended it to sound a specific way. I just want it to sound enhanced or better. Now, I say this, I don't do a ton of additive EQ, actually. Other than the vocals, like, I'll do a lot of, like, top-end stuff, So I have a lot of Universal Audio, and this is just, it doesn't matter what EQ I use, but I like to use the Moog EQ or the Precision EQ and turn it up to like the highest, or like the George Massenberg EQ and like turn it up to a super duper high frequency, like 25 hertz, 20 hertz and above. Just like crank the high end a little bit just to kind of get that sparkly stuff out. That doesn't really affect the mid-range at all. I like to do that just to brighten things up a bit. But other than that, I don't typically add a ton of additive EQ, because adding EQ kind of, from what I've noticed, changes the sound. Subtractive EQ makes sound better, but additive EQ kind of changes a tone of a thing. And maybe that's kind of like good. You know, I'm not saying that I don't add additive EQ. I don't add to frequency. I do. I still use additive EQ, but I think my mindset is a little bit different from a lot of other people. That's not like a main core process. Like, I don't have to add to a certain frequency for different instruments. Typically, what I've noticed is in the mid-range, and I'm talking like the entire mid-range spectrum, like 500 hertz to 4,000, 5,000, 4,000, 5K, you know, all that information is typically pretty vital to the tone of an instrument or a voice. Like, even with the voice, I don't mess around with the mid-range a lot. Like, I'll do, like, really, really thin, high-Q subtractive cuts to get out little hissy frequencies that bug me. I'm really sensitive to that. I feel like I'm really good at that just because my speakers are bright and I can hear that really well. As well as, I do a little bit, like, I cut out the low end a lot. This is me personally. A lot of mixing engineers like to leave in a little bit of low end for the vocals. And some people will go as far as to say that it's almost blasphemous to high pass anything, right? But for me, I like to high pass the vocals, and I cut out a ton of the low end, because unless a singer or a rapper is like right next to you, like whispering into your ear, like there's no low end in a voice. If there's any sort of sense of distance from a vocalist at all, there's no low end. So I just try to keep it realistic, try to keep it clear, and move stuff away so the bass can come out. And that's specific for my genre, but I just don't believe that vocals need too much low end. I did mess around with that. I used to mess around with that a lot, and I've kind of settled down after years of kind of doing different techniques and different stuff. I do like that kind of that radio ready. Not a lot of low end in a vocal sound. Again, back to the mid-range, I don't really mess with that at all. I mean, a lot of the character and tone comes from that. I don't believe it needs to be messed around too much. Sometimes I cut out a little bit of that, like 3.5K, with a very broad EQ. When you do an EQ cut, you want to have a narrow band, and when you do a boost, you want to have a broadband. Like, again, like, these are rules that you don't need to follow. Like, there's no such thing as rules. We're trying to get you out of your head of thinking there's a right way to do anything, because that's not true. There is no right way to do anything. So what I like to do, I've kind of decided that I kind of like that fairly broadband and cut around 3.5K sometimes if the vocal is a little bit too bright. This is one of those things where I could tell you what I do, but I can't teach you what a good vocal or, you know, what good drums sound like. Like, you have to figure that out on your own. And like, you can't negate experience. Like, you have to like learn, and you have to train your ears, and you got to always be using reference tracks and whatnot. But, just in my case, that's kind of what I like. That's what I hear. That's what I, think that they should be most of the time. And that's part of my sound as well with my mixes. And so with that, I'd like to talk a little bit about compression and give you a little fun fact. I discovered this, but did you know that the attack time on a compressor doesn't delay the start of the compression? In fact, compression always starts immediately once it passes the threshold, when a transient or whatever passes the threshold. But the attack time measures how long it will take for the compression to reach two-thirds of the way 2/3 of the way to the gain reduction that it's measured at. So, for example, if something is supposed to be, if something passes the threshold and the compressor reads it and sees it as it's supposed to cut it, depending on the ratio, it's supposed to cut it negative 6 dBs, right? So it's supposed to cut at 6 dBs. So the attack time is based on how long it takes, how many milliseconds it takes for the compressor to reach 4 dBs. Now, that means you're right. So you're thinking, whoa, like that means that if the transient's fast enough, like a snare, and the attack time is slow, it won't have the time to ever reach its gain reduction. And that is exactly right. So sometimes, like for example, a snare, we'll keep using this example, the transients are very quick, and if you have a slow attack time, it doesn't allow for the compressor to hit all the way as it has calculated. It starts coming back down, starts releasing the compression before it even gets all the way there. But for things like vocals where they're or like horn, or like I don't know, something where it's a little bit more longer bass vocals, where it's not like super fast transients, then typically that attack time is measured, again, like it's usually measured by the amount of time. So that time is based on how long it takes the compressor to reach 2/3 of the way to the gain reduction that it was calculated to get to. So that's kind of interesting, right? So all compressors start at zero. And here's another thing that I think is interesting. I've kind of discovered over the years, some people would like to say that compression thickens up an instrument. I kind of find compression to do the opposite most of the time. I find that compression kind of thins things out, and I have to thicken things back up. I honestly think you guys should do some experimentation with this and let me know what you think. But I honestly, most compressors, they don't thicken things up for me. They thin things out. I mean, obviously, you can play with the attack and release. And I like the way that compressors hit. Like, I love the distressor on an acoustic snare. And I like the way that sounds. And it doesn't, like, thin it up in the sense that it's, like, unusable. It just, the attack, the feel of it, the vibe changes a bit. But it doesn't make it, it doesn't like add 200 hertz to a snare. You know what I'm saying? Like it doesn't thicken it up. Typically, like again, compression is just turning down volume. So realistically speaking, like it doesn't just let the low end through and most compressors will equally compress all frequencies together. So the whole thing just gets quieter. They're like, theoretically speaking, it shouldn't really change too much. Now, like if you put in a Fairchild plugin, then they add some saturation and stuff. So there's something to say about that. But that being said, like I don't believe compression is the go-to end-all winner of everything. Like you don't have to put on compression if it sounds good without anything. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I'll say this a bunch of times as well. I think one of the hardest skills in what we do is knowing when not to do something. Does that make sense? Like, knowing and realizing, okay, this sounds good enough. I don't need to do anything. Like, I feel like that's one of the harder skills that nobody really talks about, that nobody teaches. I feel like as a mixing engineer, that's like your bread and butter. Like, you need to know when not to do something. You need to know when you don't have to EQ something because it sounds decent. Like, okay, for example, a beat maker, a producer who makes beats typically mixes his own beats a little bit, and they're typically trying to sell their beats. So it's in their best interest to mix it down the best that they can. Yeah, you got their beat, you got their stems, but it's probably mixed to a certain degree just because they want to sell it to people. They want people to think it sounds good. Now, if you go out of the way and make it sound different and change from the original vibe, as well as if you start making changes to it, not really knowing what you're doing, like this is like, and yeah, like you should know when not to do something. A lot of these samples, they sound good already. these beat stems, they sound good already. It's not perfect. Usually the low end is a total crap show. And but typically, like, most things, like, they have a vibe. Now, I will say that sometimes people layer kicks and snares or whatever, and people will ask me how I got drums sound better, and I just say, like, hey, like, I just deleted a bunch of tracks, like, or muted a few tracks. Like, you had like, six kicks going. I just muted three of them. In fact, I muted five of them, actually, and we only kept one, and I just made that one sound real good. Like, there are times that I do that, but in general, producers make things sound good on purpose. They're trying to get a vibe, and it goes back to respecting that vibe. I think that EQ and compression are really, really good tools. I think they are often overused. And I think that, in general, here's another stupid little thing. In general, when people boost the top end, they don't boost at a high enough frequency. Like, you should be doing, like, if you want to boost that top end, like, get an EQ that can do, like, 20 hertz and above and, like, hear that. And you can crank that, like, almost, like, 10 dBs and it would still sound good. Like, you should experiment with that. Tell me how it goes. Anyway, that's it for today's episode. Make sure you hit me up on Instagram if you have any questions or want to hear about my opinion on a specific topic. My Instagram handle is at DEEKEIDKMixes. So it's DK Mixes, and DK spelled DEEKEI. Or you can email me at DKMixes@gmail.com. So with that information, go out and practice. Go out and train your ears. Go and mix for your friends. If you're new to this game, like, just do it for free. Do it for dirt cheap. Do it for like $5 a mix. I don't really believe in doing things for free, but at the same time, sometimes you just gotta hustle to get in the door, you know? I just do it. There's no other way to learn. Like, again, you can't negate experience. You have to just do it. So don't just believe me and try it on your, like, go ahead and use it. Practice, you know, download some stems. If you really, really need some stems and you don't got any you don't have any access to, like, anybody that can give you, like, a session or willing to work with you, then hit me up. Hit me up on Instagram. I'll send you a Google link with one of my sessions from one of my artists that I'm working with, you know, with their permission, obviously. And I'll give you stems to work on, like, if that's what you want to hear. I'll give you feedback on a mix. Send me an MP3 of your mix to my email, DKMixes@gmail.com. And, like, I'll listen to it. I'll be genuine. You know, I'm here. I'm growing with you guys. I have a lot to learn from you. And we're learning and in this together. Like, this is a subjective art that we do. And sometimes we all need a little bit of affirmation, a little bit of that confidence to keep going, and knowing that we're on the right path, someone to tell you we're on the right path. And sometimes you just need to work on it. You just need to practice. And this is one of those things. You really just need to practice. Anyway, that's it for today. Thanks for listening. Stay saucy.
1, 2, 3.
This episode of Mixing Music with DK has been brought to you by LaunchPod Media. If you want to start a podcast, make sure to start it right with LaunchPod Media. We have a lot of videos of the podcast and various other tutorials on YouTube. You can subscribe to our channel at mixingmusicpodcast.com/YouTube. Happy mixing and enjoy the show.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.